Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
To the left hand side for Vieira, who'll play it through to Gabriel Jesus, who's in here for Arsenal. Gabriel Jesus to finish it off. Oh, what a way to do it! Gabriel Jesus seals the points for Arsenal. He's back, and he's back with a bang.
Into the penalty area it goes. Gabriel Jesus, and it's into the back of the net. Arsenal take an early lead through Gabriel.
Listening to the Chronicles of Aguna, the daily Arsenal podcast with me, Harry Simeon.
Hey everybody, how's it going? Hope you're all good, hope you're all well. Welcome back to another live edition of the Chronicles of Aguna podcast. It's the big match preview. I kind of want to rename this episode to the big weekend preview, because on this edition, we're not just going to preview Arsenal's game against Brentford. Of course, it's a really important game. It's a game that is massive when you think about some of the other fixtures taking place this weekend. But I do want to focus a little bit also on the game that's coming up at Anfield as well on Sunday, because that has the potential to have huge ramifications on the title race. So we're going to do a bit of that on this episode as well. We're going to preview Arsenal-Brentford in detail, as we always do. We're going to discuss some of the statistics going into this game. I'm going to talk a little bit about what I expect to see from Thomas Frank's side. We'll talk about the starting lineup. What should Mikel Arteta do, given his update on the team news? We'll also talk a little bit about his press conference yesterday. We'll run through some of the key points from that. Then I'll give you a prediction. But as I say, we're also going to focus on that game between Liverpool and Manchester City, which is a huge one, arguably the biggest game of the season so far, and takes place on Sunday. All I want from Arsenal on Saturday, and I'm not greedy, I don't want another 5-6, that's not what I'd like it, but that's not what I'm sort of going into the weekend expecting. All I want is Arsenal, however they manage to do it, by hook or by crook, to put another 3 points on the board, so that we can sit down on Sunday afternoon and watch this fascinating encounter between Liverpool and Manchester City unfold without any regret. If Liverpool then go on to win, out of our hands, out of our control, but I will know that we did our bit. If Manchester City go on and win, and I'll talk a little bit about what I'd prefer to see happen in that game a little bit later on. If Manchester City go win, or Liverpool go and win, or there's a draw, whatever my preferred outcome is, if I don't get that, I'm fine, as long as I know that we've done our job, as long as we've done our bit. I don't want to be relying on a certain result in order to kind of keep us alive in the title race. We just got to do our bit and nothing else matters. As long as Arsenal pick up 3 points, I'm not going to obsess over what happens on Sunday, but I just want to be able to sit down on Sunday afternoon and watch that game and enjoy a good game of football, and whatever happens, happens is something that we'll deal with further down the line, because we know that we've done our bit. It's Mother's Day on Sunday as well, and I've just broken it to the wife that we might have to do our Mother's Day outing, meal, whatever, on the Monday, because I'm working on Saturday, but I also don't want to miss any of the football on Sunday. I mean, we got two cracking games. We've got Villa against Spurs, which is massive in terms of the top four race, the battle of the high lines between Unai Emery and Ange Postecoglou. And then, of course, we've got this game that I keep mentioning, because it feels like, I'm not going to say it's more important than the Arsenal game, it's not, but it feels like that's where everybody's eyes are at. And what I don't want is us to be complacent, and I'm not suggesting that we would be, but what I want is put that to one side, focus on our game, go and do our job, and then we'll just see what happens on Sunday and take it from there. Good morning to lots of you who are joining us live in the chat box right now. Hope you're all good. Hope you're all well. Thank you so much for joining me. Really, really appreciate it. If you're watching this back a little bit later on, then please do leave a like on the video. Leave your thoughts in the comment section down below and make sure that you're subscribed to the channel. If you're watching us, I've said what you should do if you're watching us. If you're listening to us, please leave us a review as well. It really, really does help. But look, let's start off then by focusing on the Arsenal, who take on Brentford this weekend. Let's do it. Okay, I thought the best place to start would be Mikel Arteta's press conference, which he gave to the media yesterday afternoon. I'll share the screen with you and we'll run through some of the key components of that. Of course, Aaron Ramsdale will be returning in goal this weekend. We don't really have much choice because we're yet to complete the deal for David Raya. Obviously, we didn't manage to do it during the January transfer window. It is a deal that's been in the pipeline to happen, of course, in the summer due to sort of financial reasons and the way we kind of want to balance the books and all the rest of it. We know that's the real reason. Nobody was born yesterday. Well, people were born yesterday, but none of us that are watching this, if you're watching this and you were born yesterday, that is incredible. But yeah, I'm going around the houses. But the point is that Aaron Ramsdale is playing this weekend, and that was one of the things that dominated the press conference. Mikel Arteta was asked to provide a kind of general update on the team news, and he said, look, not much. We've got some players back last Monday, and then we had, of course, Martinelli and Bukayo with little issues, but we're pretty positive that hopefully they can be part of that, but we'll have to wait and see how they are tomorrow. The classic Mikel Arteta line of, we'll have to wait and see how they are tomorrow. So he never wants to give too much away, does he, with regards to who's fit, who's not fit. The noises I'm hearing and the kind of word I'm getting is that there is a lot of positivity within the group that these two will be available to participate in some way. Bukayo Saka was unwell up at Sheffield United and he came off at halftime because the game was essentially won. He probably would have powered through and continued had the game not been in the state it was. But when you go in at halftime 5-0 up, why take the risk? Why put him through that? And Martinelli's issue, we understand, is a cut, which is going to be painful and is going to need wrapping and bandaging and all of that. Don't know the details. I don't know how deep the cut is, if it's one that, you know, is going to limit him from being able to participate in training or playing on the day. I'm less worried about the Martinelli one because we've got different options there. And I think the right wing position is a position that we're always short in when Bukayo Saka is not available. And I think if you had to pick one of them and say he's more important to the team, you would, wouldn't you, pick Bukayo Saka? So I wouldn't take the gamble with Martinelli if there's any issue. But of course, with Saka, it was an illness thing. And I'm just hoping that he has recovered from that and will be able to play a part. Mikel Arteta was asked about Aaron Ramsdale's game time this season ahead of this game against Brentford. He says it is what it is. He is fully prepared. He trains really well every day. He's desperate to play like the rest of the boys who haven't had that many opportunities. And Saturday is a great day for him. This could be Aaron Ramsdale's last dance in an Arsenal shirt. It could be. It could be because, you know, I can't see him displacing David Raya unless there is a problem with David Raya. You know, the guy is obviously ineligible to play this weekend. Otherwise, you can bet your bottom dollar that he would have been starting it on Saturday. Why would you change it? The defence has been solid. David Raya, I think, is developing and is coming into his own at Arsenal Football Club after a bit of a shaky start, it has to be said. So I don't think for any reason, I don't think there's any reason that we would have seen Ramsdale come back into the side had it not been for a David Raya injury or this scenario where, of course, David Raya, who still belongs to Brentford technically, is not allowed to play as a result of that. Mikel Arteta was asked about Aaron's attitude this season. He said he's been brilliant. He's been really good, really supportive, really pushing everything in training like I expected. And it's a joy to have two top goalkeepers in the team. And that is what we have, you know, two top goalkeepers available to us. Lots of talk about the Dubai trip. You know, we've heard all of this already, so I don't really want to go into that too much. Mikel Arteta was asked about focusing on Brentford and maybe not thinking about the big game that I've mentioned about 600 times at the start of this podcast, because that's how big it is and mega it is in terms of the title race. And he said, look, the only thing we can control is the Brentford game. Perform well, play better than them and earn the right to win the game. Let's do that. And then if we do that on Sunday, it's a beautiful game to watch for any football supporter. And I will certainly be watching it. And as I keep saying, if we go into that game on Sunday, knowing that we've done our bit and we've done our job, you can just kind of, and I know people will have their preferred outcomes, but it's much easier to then go, whatever happens, happens. It is what it is. Pour yourself a nice drink, sit down and watch the game and just enjoy it, because it is going to be a cracking game of football. He was asked if he cares about the result of that game. He said, I can't control it. I'll enjoy a magnificent game of football between two of the best teams in Europe in the last decade. And let's see what that brings. But the focus is on us and on Brentford. He was asked if he has a preference with regards to who wins. And he says, privately and publicly, I have the same answer, because it's nothing to do with me. He was asked about new contracts. We've heard a lot over the last few days about Ben White being close to signing a new deal, Takahiro Tomiyasu apparently having his wages doubled to around about 100k a week. Mikel Arteta said, not really. I leave that more to Edu and the club to announce those things when the time is right. So Mikel Arteta not giving anything away on that front. Obviously, if Arsenal win the game on Saturday, and then there's a draw between Liverpool and Manchester City, Arsenal would stay top of the league. And Mikel Arteta was asked if Arsenal moving into the top spot, and even if it's just overnight, you know, does that add pressure to our rivals? Does that create a pressure? Do they then look at the table and go, bloody hell, we need to pull our fingers out here, because Arsenal, you know, who look like they might be falling away before this kind of winter break, have put this incredible run of results together. They've put their foot on the gas. They're blowing teams away. They're making statement after statement in terms of their victories and the nature of them. Does Arsenal going top cause a problem for those teams? Because the fact is, right, that, you know, you win 5-0, you win 6-0. Obviously, it's a boost for your goal difference, but ultimately, it only gives you 3 points, right? So for all the praise that Arsenal have got, and for all the talk about how brilliant they've been and how excellent they're performing, they're still third in the Premier League table. But then does the combination of Arsenal maybe leapfrogging those two teams, if all goes well on Saturday, plus the fact that it's not been Arsenal scraping over the line in recent weeks, it's been everyone they play, they're literally blowing them away, does that, as a kind of combination, cause the likes of Liverpool and Manchester City, who will be far more experienced than us in this type of situation, obviously, but does it cause them to really sort of think, shit, you know, Arsenal could be a real big problem for us? I don't know. He said, Mikel Arteta, we know the demands that we have and the demands that Brentford are going to ask us to win the match and identify that we are still not top of the league and we want to be better than where we are at the moment and the other two are. So we have to continue to win. Again, he was asked about the outcome of that Man City-Liverpool game. He said he was asked if secretly he's hoping that there's a draw. And he said, honestly, it's nothing to do with me. I will sit down with my kids and enjoy the match. And that's kind of the key points. He was asked a little bit about Kai Havertz. I do want to address this because I feel like Kai Havertz is finally getting his flowers from the, not just the Arsenal fan base, but from the wider footballing world. I sat down on TalkSport 2 yesterday with Rory Jennings, who's been so critical of Kai Havertz. And even he had to put his hands up and say that it's working at the moment and that he's performing really, really well. He did kind of sour it a little bit by saying, well, I know that he always has a good march. And, you know, when the time comes for him to kind of stand up and be counted, he'll probably shrink and disappear. But to be fair, it's only the 8th of March, mate. So, you know, he's been pretty good through February as well. And so maybe his purple patch, as you called it, 1 month purple patch, is a little bit longer than maybe you thought or expected. But on the impact that Kai Havertz is having, Mikel Arteta said, it shows his character as well and how he's dealt with all those question marks. The attitude he showed all the time when things were not that good in certain phases of the game, but he continued to work hard. And that's why he's loved by everybody here. And then we can see his quality and intelligence on the pitch. and the contribution he's having to the team. So we're very happy with him. Is that Mikel Arteta admitting, maybe for the first time as clear as that, that the Kai Havertz thing has taken some time to work? Because he's always defended him on the spot, as he should. It's his player. It's a player that he, you know, wanted the club to go out on a limb to get. And they did that. They supported the manager. They got him what he wanted. And, you know, it seems like Mikel Arteta there in that kind of sort of line of comment is sort of admitting and accepting or sort of acknowledging the fact that maybe people were right at the early stages to say, don't really know what he brings to the team, et cetera, et cetera. But we can't talk about that now because the performance levels are just so good. Declan Rice has been talking publicly about wanting to score more goals. And you could see in that game against Sheffield United, as we discussed the other night, that he was desperate, wasn't he, to get on the score sheet. Like the positions he was taking up, the aggression with which he was sort of approaching the ball and wanting to get into those spaces. You know, it was obvious and clear for everybody to see that he was desperate to get in on the act. And Mikel Arteta was asked about Declan Rice wanting more goal involvements and how that can kind of be contagious, to which he said, that's something that is amongst the team. They want to keep improving. They all believe that they have another gear or two to go to. And that's the level that we want to push them to. We are achieving it with the majority of the players and we have to continue to do it. Absolutely. Okay. The rest of it is, you know, pretty trivial. Like there's some interesting bits in there. I would go through it and read it if you want. I would even maybe watch the video. It's probably a bit easier. But he was asked, and I do want to touch on this point because I spoke about this on the podcast that we did after the game. I talked about the fact that all these players had come on against Sheffield United. Like we were cruising, we battered them by half time. It was not a contest anymore. Yeah. And listen, for me, for Eddie Nketiah, the writing's on the wall. Done. I don't think he's an Arsenal player next season. I don't think Reece Nelson is an Arsenal player next season either. The one of the three mentioned in this line of questioning that I think should probably be given more of a chance is Emile Smith Rowe. But I said after the game against Sheffield United, the fact that he didn't come on, that could be quite damning, actually. The fact that, you know, okay, we made the change on the right-hand side because Saka was unwell and he chose Fabio Vieira. Fine, I'm okay with that. You know, Fabio Vieira needs to build his fitness back up and he was actually performing quite well before he picked up that injury in November. There were signs that he was coming into his own. And Emile Smith Rowe from the right-hand side, does that really work? No. So I didn't really have an issue with him making that decision. The substitution that I found strange, given the number of minutes that each of them have played recently, was Trossard coming on in midfield in the eight position over Emile Smith Rowe. Now, Trossard has had plenty of minutes recently. Yeah, a lot of them have come from the bench, of course. But it wasn't a case of we need to give Trossard minutes to build him up. We know where Leandro Trossard is at. But it was an opportunity to give Emile Smith Rowe that time to maybe get a goal, build up his confidence in a game that was over as a contest, very, very one-sided and that we were in complete control of. But he chose not to do that. And I found that quite interesting. This is what Mikel had to say on Eddie, Reece and Emile Smith Rowe not featuring against Sheffield United. He said, we discussed things and we cannot play every player in every game. Those players played a few games ago against Newcastle and they had opportunities to do that. Now we have five subs. Before we only had three. So we have another two players happy. That's the way I take it. But you always have players who want to be involved and play. But unfortunately, it is impossible. It's not in our hands. It's impossible to achieve that. And they know that. Mikel Arteta kind of basically saying that it is what it is, sort of shut up and put up with it because that's how it's going to be. And while the team is performing and while the team is winning, then nobody really has any grounds, do they, to be critical of Mikel Arteta's approach. But I thought the Emile Smith Rowe snub, if you like, at Sheffield United was quite interesting. And it's another bit of evidence that sort of suggests, doesn't say for sure, but sort of suggests that come the summer, if the right amount of money is put on the table, we might see Emile Smith Rowe leave the club too. But hey, okay, we're going to take a really short pause. When we come back, we're going to preview the Brentford game in terms of some of the statistics around it. And we're going to talk a little bit about what we can expect from Thomas Frank's side this weekend. Okay, Arsenal versus Brentford. Saturday evening kickoff. I do think the atmosphere in the evening kickoffs is better. My favourite kickoff time is a Saturday 3 o'clock. It's not too early. And it means that I can get what I need to get done earlier on in the day. But it also means that I'm not back too late, which means that I can come home nice and refreshed and record a podcast. 5:30, I find myself kind of waiting around all day for them. And I know we had an 8 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday a few weeks ago, and that was the same. You're just sitting around all day. You're like, you don't really want to commit to doing anything because you know you're going to head down to the Emirates. And it's just a little bit weird. But when I got into the stadium for that 8 o'clock kickoff against Newcastle, I thought the atmosphere was fantastic. And I'm expecting a similar atmosphere tomorrow because we all know how significant this game is. We all know how important it is. And you know what? There's a little bit of something between Arsenal and Brentford that seems to have developed in recent times. We were robbed against them last season with the goal that should never have stood. We dropped two vital points in the title race as a result of that. We had to go there and get a late winner earlier this season through Kai Havertz. And yeah, we do struggle against them at times, you know, and they're a side that set up really, really well. They know, you know, the spaces that they need to protect. And we'll talk about what we can expect from them tactically in a little bit. It is important to note that this time around, Brentford have a lot of players missing. Like, I don't even know how many defenders they've got available to field. But this, even with that being the case, and it might be that Thomas Frank has to use some midfield players in his back line, I'm still pretty confident of what I think Thomas Frank will do. And I've covered Brentford quite a lot over the last couple of seasons. So I'm not just kind of making this up, but this is based on what I've seen. And I've had a look a little bit earlier on today at what they tend to do in the bigger games, shall we say. So we'll get onto that in a little bit. But let's go over to the Premier League's official website and let's have a look at some of the stats around this game, the history of this fixture. It's not a very very much played Premier League fixture because Brentford haven't been in the Premier League throughout most of the time of its existence as a competition. There have been five meetings between these two sides in Premier League history. Arsenal have won three of them. Brentford have won one, and there's been one draw along the way. We all remember the one Brentford win. It was a horrible night at the G-Tech first game of the season. But since then, they haven't beaten us. They have managed that one draw, though, the draw that I referenced a little bit earlier on, where, yeah, we were robbed, if we're being honest. If we look back at the last five, well, there's only been five games, so this is our entire Premier League history with Brentford right there on your screen. 1-0 win at the G-Tech back in November. That was one of the coldest nights I've ever sort of been at a football match. I remember coming out and my hands were like, I couldn't even move my fingers. The Saturday, 11th of February, 2023, draw was that controversial one I mentioned. Prior to that, earlier on in that season, we beat them really comfortably at the G-Tech by 3-0. And the first half performance from Arsenal that day was as good as you've seen maybe over the last 2-3 years. Saturday, 19th of February, 2022, we got our revenge for that opening night defeat earlier on in the 21-22 campaign with a 2-1 win. If you look at the form guide, we're in contrasting form. Arsenal have won all five of their last Premier League games because the form guide on this website does only take into consideration the last five. Of course, Arsenal's winning run stretches back further than that. But people have been saying to me that, you know, during this run, we've had a really favourable run of games and it's been really, really easy. And what did you expect? Yeah, look, we played Burnley and Sheffield United, two of the Premier League's whipping boys, agreed. But we battered Newcastle. We battered West Ham on their own patch. We beat Liverpool as well. So I hate it when people try to discredit the fact that, you know, we're on this incredible run and almost try and pick holes in it. Brentford have only won one of their last five. They managed a 2-2 draw against Chelsea last weekend. Pretty decent result. But given that they turned the game around from sort of being 1-0 down to 2-1 up and then didn't manage to take all 3 points, they'll be quite frustrated by that. You know, and the reaction from the Chelsea fans after the game said it all. They weren't happy with the second half performance. They weren't happy with the display. There were chances to get Pochettino out. There were chants about Abramovich and all the rest of it. So Todd Boehly coming under fire. And of course, Maurizio Pochettino too. But for Brentford, they really do need the points at the moment. You know, there's no doubt about that. They're currently in 15th place. They've only won 7 of their matches this season. They've drawn 5 and lost 15. On average, they're only scoring 1.4 goals per match. But they're conceding on average nearly 2 goals per match, which is pretty poor. They've only managed 4 clean sheets, and they're not very high up in the chance creation numbers either. Arsenal, of course, won 19, drawn 4, lost 4, averaging 2.5 goals per game across the Premier League season so far. Conceding less than 1 a game, 11 clean sheets so far, 9 of which belong to David Raya, who is a Brentford man officially still. And then if I take it on to top player stats and we look at goals, Bukayo Saka leads the way in the Premier League for Arsenal on 13. And guess who Arsenal's second top goal scorer is in the Premier League? Yep, you've guessed it. Kai Havertz, 60 million down the drain. Kai Havertz scores again. Hopefully we're hearing that chant again at the weekend. Brian Mbeumo is in second place. I've been told it's pronounced Mbeumo rather than Mbeumo. Anyway, he's got 7 as well. So he's level in joint second with Kai Havertz. If we move over to assists, Bukayo Saka again leads the way with 8. Martin Odegaard is in second with 6. And Declan Rice from deep having a big creative impact for Arsenal this season with 5 in the Premier League. And if we take it across to the final metric, which is tackles, Christian Norgaard of Brentford leads the way. He's got 73. That's almost 20 more tackles than Declan Rice. And I know when you have more possession, you make less tackles. Simple. But Declan Rice is in second and third, which this surprises me kind of every time I look at this, every preview we do, every week building up to a game. I'm always like, Saka, high up in the tackles chart. What's that about? But it shows you what he does, not just in the opposition box and in and around that area. It shows you that he brings you something else as well. And it also highlights the fact that Arsenal like to defend from the front. So that was our statistical preview of Arsenal's meeting with Brentford this weekend. Let's go over to the live chat because there's plenty coming through. Big good morning to everybody who is joining us live at this moment in time and everybody that will be watching or listening to this back a little bit later on. Lots more hellos, which is lovely to see. Thank you, guys. Peter says, morning, Harry. Always loved your coverage on Arsenal and the podcast. Keep going, my fellow Greek brother. Thank you, mate. Big shout out to you as well. Osuo Aboneni is very confident. He says, good morning, Harry. We're going to top the league this week. I hope so. Damien says, wow, brilliant bonus with the Anfield preview. Yep, we're going to do that too. It's really important. So I think we should. What else have we got? Damien says, come to Jamaica and eat some ackee and saltfish. You know what? Love to. The Geordie Gooner says, nice to catch you live, H. Missed you Monday on the short trip back to Sheffield. Good to see you, mate. Rowan is joining us and says, morning all. Finally able to watch a live show. Keep up the great work, Harry. I have to say, like, I do apologize that the timings of some of these shows are just all over the place. I've tried on numerous occasions. Those that have been listening for a while will know this. I've tried on numerous occasions to try and stick to some kind of routine. But what that means is then I would sometimes put out content that is out of date. I'd put out content without capturing maybe a big story that dropped an hour after I released it or whatever. So that's part of it. But the other thing is, work is just so kind of fluid. Like, my wife absolutely hates the fact that I make plans with the family and then sometimes I have to drop them because work comes in. It's the life of the job that I do, and it can be a little bit unpredictable, and that can be frustrating for the people around you. And I can imagine it's frustrating for you guys that you want to wake up. If it's something that you listen to on a daily basis and you want to know what time it's going to be available and you want to make sure that you get to listen to it, et cetera, et cetera. But it just isn't always possible for me. So I do apologize about that. Okay. Tom says, Harry, is it what was left unsaid by Arteta that speaks volumes? He said they got minutes, but kind of hints that they didn't take advantage. Just touching on the comments with regards to like Smith Rowe and Nelson and Nketiah. Yeah, maybe. I don't think any of them have done anything that you would look at and say, well, now I've got a headache. Now I've got a problem. Like, nobody's given him, and I'm talking about that group of players specifically, a selection headache. Add to that that, in particular with Emile Smith Rowe, he can't seem to trust his fitness and that he's going to be available for a sustained period of time to kind of work him back up to the point that he wants to be. Yeah, I think you've got to be ruthless at this level. Like, and, you know, if 2 years ago you told me that this was going to be the case with Emile Smith Rowe, I'd be outraged. But I've seen the evolution of the team and the development of the team. And unfortunately, not through a lack of talent, but largely due to a lack of being available, he's been left behind a little bit. And somebody asked me a question yesterday, which I thought was really, really interesting, about Oleksandr Zinchenko. Like, what does the future hold for Zinchenko? And we saw some reports suggesting that he's a target for Bayern and a couple of other clubs on the continent. And I just think to myself, like, we might well get to the point, like when Timber's back, when Tomiyasu's back, that Zinchenko isn't seen as a vital part of the team anymore. And therefore, we have to move him on. And if we do, that's because the team's evolved and progressed. That doesn't take away from the impact that he's had, though, because him and Jesus were massive in terms of lifting the base level of this team. Zinchenko and Jesus arriving at the football club with a winning mentality from a winning side with bags and bags of talent, bags and bags of quality. They were huge in the step forward that we took last season. That is undeniable. Now, we might progress further and leave those guys behind, but I will never disrespect either of them because I recognize their contribution to Arsenal's progress as a team. And that's how it should be. You should acknowledge and respect what people bring to the table. But in order to keep maintaining that level and keep progressing further, you will need to be ruthless at times. And with both of those players, Jesus and Zinchenko, that I've mentioned, it's nothing to do with talent. If they're moved on, it won't be anything to do with talent. It will be to do with the fact that fitness is a constant problem for them. And you can't rely on players that can't rely on their bodies, essentially. That's just the way it goes. And listen, there'll be players that never pick up injuries and all of a sudden pick up a bad one and they're out for a year and you're stuck and you're up shit street. That's how it goes. But if someone is constantly breaking down, you do, as a manager, need to think about that impact that that has on your plans. Afsar Gunner, we're going to do some more questions a little bit later on, but there's a few good ones in the chat, so I want to address them now. Afsar says, do you think Ramsdale's form will be affected due to a lack of games this season? I mean, it isn't going to be easy to come in and just come in cold. You know, he hasn't played since the last time we played Brentford, right? You know, I'm talking about in the Premier League, and that was November. It's not going to be easy to come in out of the cold, but Ramsdale's a good enough goalkeeper. And if we defend the way we've been defending and we limit what the goalkeeper has to do in terms of making saves and coming and catching crosses, then we'll be okay. I think his distribution is going to be important. And I don't think Ramsdale was the worst in the world at that. I think Raya is slightly better, but I don't think Ramsdale was ever particularly bad at that. So I think stylistically, Ramsdale brings you a lot of the same things. And that's why I'm not as worried about the change as I would be if we brought Matt Turner in, for example, like we would have done last season. So having two top goalkeepers is great, but you need two top goalkeepers that can do the same things and that can, you know, provide some continuity in terms of the way that you want to play. If you've got a goalkeeper all of a sudden that doesn't want the ball at his feet, but you've been training week after week after week, trying to build out from the back or doing it with lots of trust, you don't want to then have to start trying to break habits on the spot because you have a goalkeeper that isn't equipped to do what you want. Raya is better with some of those things. I would definitely say that. But I don't think that we'd be going into the game on Saturday and going, well, Ramsdale's playing, so now we can't pass to the goalkeeper in X situation. We can't move the ball through the lines via the goalkeeper in Y situation because we've got a goalkeeper that can do most of those things. Look, I will come back to the questions a little bit later on in the show, so keep them up your sleeve and we'll come back to some of those a little bit later on. What I do want to do now is talk a little bit about what we can expect from Brentford.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
What can we expect from Thomas Frank's side? Well, first of all, a low block. Surprise, surprise. We've had a few of those to deal with this season, haven't we? Thomas Frank's side will be turning up at the Emirates Stadium on Saturday, knowing that any sort of positive result would give him a huge confidence boost. And that could be key in terms of their chances of survival this year. I find it difficult to comprehend the fact that they're down there, because I think they're a much better team than where their league position shows. And having covered some of their games this season, I think their performances have been better than some of the results that they've picked up as well. But they are where they are, and injuries have played a big, big part in that. Ivan Toney's back now, and he's been a thorn in our side in the past. But I think given the distances that we seem to keep teams from our penalty area these days, I think we can limit Ivan Toney's impact if we are clever and if we do things right. They will try and play into him and get runners in and around him, whether that be Vissar. I don't know if Mbeumo's fit. But, you know, they do have players that like to play off of Ivan Toney, and we've got to be careful with that. But I think we've got a set of defenders now that I'm quite confident can get across the ground quick enough and can win the initial aerial duels that maybe we weren't winning 2 or 3 years ago, 3 years ago when we turned up at Brentford and got absolutely battered on their first game in the Premier League. So I'm feeling quite confident that we can handle them. In terms of breaking them down, I talked about the fact that they got lots and lots of defensive players missing. I still expect Thomas Frank to go with a back five. And then with that sort of protective three in front of them, if anybody watched the game against Sheffield United on Monday night and thinks that a back four is the way to go at the Emirates, you're mad. And I don't think that Thomas Frank would do something so silly. Now, the only way he might sort of be forced, if you like, into playing with a back four is if he really doesn't have the defensive personnel available. And if he thinks that actually playing some of those guys out of position is going to be more of a hindrance than a help, then you might see him play with a back four. But I think if he can, he's going to play with a back five. He's going to play with that protective three in the middle. And then he's going to try and use Ivan Toney as an outlet with a Vissa or an Mbeumo, whoever's available, running in off of him. What I really don't want to see at any stage in the game at the weekend is Neil Maupay, because I don't want anybody to lose their heads with him and get suspended. We know he loves winding people up. It's all he talks about. He doesn't really play much football these days. Neil Maupay, that's what he's more interested in, is getting under people's skin and winding them up. But that's what I expect from Brentford. A low block, a back five, and they will try and hang in the game for as long as possible. It's important. It's really important that Arsenal start fast. Move the ball quickly, do things with quality, do things with zip and tempo. And if we can get that breakthrough in the first 20 minutes of the game, then I think we'll be in a really, really good position to then go on and win the game and win it quite comfortably. But what you don't want is it to be one of those games where they hold on, they waste time, they run down the clock, the frustration sets in with the crowd, because we're all desperate to get 3 points again this weekend. And when you look at our remaining fixtures, well, this is one that you simply have to win. There's no excuses here. Just like there wasn't at Sheffield United the other night. And, you know, thankfully we went and done the job there and done it quite quickly. But yeah, this is going to be a fascinating game in terms of how Brentford are going to look to try and nullify our threat. I keep talking about us attacking with that front five, and we need to do that. And we need to do that well in this game, because I think we're probably going to face a back five. So you won't have the extra man that we did at times against Sheffield United. And that ultimately proved not to be their downfall, because I think we'd have beaten them anyway, whether they play with a back five or not. I mean, I think we scored like 4 of the 6 goals after they changed to a back five. But the point was, you know, it might have been a little bit more difficult to find that initial breakthrough had they done things, in my opinion, a different way. But hey, that's what I expect from Thomas Frank's Brentford this weekend. Okay, let me share with you guys the lineup that I would pick for the game at the weekend. And I guess, you know, to put it simply and to kind of, you know, just talk about it for what it is, I'd probably go with the same team. You know, I'd go with Ramsdale in goal this time. Obviously, that change has to happen. No doubt about that. My back four would be made up of Kivior, Gabriel, Saliba and White. I play with Jorginho, Odegaard and Rice in the midfield because I like letting Declan Rice off the leash. I like having him drive into those more advanced areas. And I think against a strong physical team like Brentford, who are probably going to play with a low block, Declan Rice's runs from deep and his power as he sort of carries the ball into those types of areas might be a really, really good weapon. I'd continue with Havertz up front. I think Jesus looked rusty the other day. I wouldn't bring him back into the side. If there's any doubt over Martinelli, I'd play Trossard. But if Martinelli's fit, then I play Martinelli. And if there's any doubt over Bukayo Saka, I bring in Jesus on the right. That's what I would do personally. So my team, for those of you listening on audio, to face Brentford, providing that all of these players are available, is Aaron Ramsdale in goal, White, Saliba, Gabriel and Kivior across the back, Jorginho, Rice and Odegaard in midfield with Martinelli, Havertz and Saka in attack. If there's any doubt over Martinelli, Trossard comes in. If there's any doubt over Saka, Jesus comes in on that right-hand side for me. Partey got some minutes the other night against Sheffield United. My God, he looked rusty. He looked like he hadn't played football in about 10 years. Thomas Partey. It's to be expected. I understand it. Not digging the guy out for it. But this is one of those situations where we kind of need to build the player back up. And aside from the obvious reasons why you'd want the game done and dusted nice and early, to be relaxed, to be more comfortable, to take your foot off the gas ahead of a big game against Porto on Tuesday as well. It's a big old week for the Gunners, isn't it? I'd quite like to have the opportunity to bring Thomas Partey on and let him have a bit of a runabout, a bit of a kickabout and start to build up his fitness, because I think he's going to be key in the running. I really do. I think to have him available, it's such a big boost, but we need the best version of Thomas Partey. And through no fault of his own, because of the fact that he's been out for so long, he's just nowhere near that at this moment. And I think despite all the positives on Monday night and all the sort of excitement around his return, it was a bit of a reality check, because you looked at him and you thought, bloody hell, you are so far off it, Thomas. We're going to need to do a lot of work to get you back to where you need to be. But that is the team I would pick to face Brentford this weekend at Emirates Stadium. Okay, prediction. I'm going to go for Arsenal 3, Brentford 0. That's what I'm going to go with. I think we will have enough. I think we should have enough. I think this is a very different Brentford side, in that the confidence isn't quite there and they're missing a lot of key players defensively in particular. I'm going to go for an Arsenal 3-0 win. Let me know your predictions and thoughts in the live chat. Yeah, get them in. Let's hear from you. Okay, short pause. And then we're going to talk about that other big game this weekend. Huge game on Sunday. Liverpool taking on Manchester City. Okay, so I've been banging on loads about how, for me, as long as we've done our job, it is what it is on Sunday, right? You can't obsess over something that you have zero control over. It's not as black and white as if Liverpool win, Arsenal are going to win the league. If Man City win, Arsenal are going to win the league. If there's a draw, Arsenal are going to win the league. So I don't have this like massive preference as to what happens here. I think you can look at it and you can find positives in every single outcome. Liverpool are top of the league right now. They're the furthest ahead of us. So if Manchester City beat them, then we go and get a result against Manchester City, things look very, very different. Happy days. If Liverpool beat Manchester City and deal Manchester City a big blow in their title hopes, and then we go and get a result at Manchester City next week, having, of course, hopefully beaten Brentford, then, you know, Manchester City have had a big kick in the balls, essentially, and Arsenal will now be looking at Liverpool and hoping to catch a Liverpool side that I don't think are as good as this Manchester City side. And I think have been riding their luck a little bit at times, a bit like we were last season. And I just wonder if that's sustainable. If it's a draw, it does damage to both of them. So whichever outcome we see on Sunday, there are positives for Arsenal. We are winning. You know, we've got an opportunity to put another 3 points on the board, go top of the league, at least temporarily. And then one of or both of these two sides are going to drop points at the weekend. It is a win-win situation for Arsenal. If you're asking me what my preference is, it's the draw. Second choice would probably be the Liverpool win. Now, that might sound wild because of the way the table looks at the moment. But going back to that point I made a few minutes ago about, in my view, Liverpool not looking as strong, Liverpool looking like a side that have at times rode their luck a little bit, not being as strong maybe away from home as they are at home. I think there's a big disparity between the Liverpool that you get at Anfield and the Liverpool that you see rock up everywhere else. I've had some close shaves away from home. I think that Liverpool are more catchable. Could be famous last words, but that's just what my gut tells me going into this weekend. And yeah, those would be my preferences. The draw first, the Liverpool win second, the Manchester City win third. But yeah, it's one that I say I want to enjoy it. I don't think I can fully enjoy it because I've got skin in the game. Indirectly, this impacts Arsenal quite a bit. If we do our job, then I can at least tolerate any outcome and accept any outcome without feeling any sense of regret. And that's really, really important because you don't want to be in that situation where you're on a bit of a downer as a result of something that was out of your control. And if, for example, the two of them draw and we do beat Brentford and we go top of the league and then we stay top of the league, we can go out on Tuesday night against Porto knowing that the league is on ice for a bit, and we then got a nice break after Porto, and we can give it our absolute all to turn that tie around. And if we do that, the confidence is only going to grow. The confidence is only going to grow. So, yeah, tactically, how do you preview this game? Really difficult to know what the pattern of the game is going to look like. City are probably going to have more of the ball. City are in far better nick when it comes to injuries and players available. I think City would have been fired up by Trent Alexander-Arnold's comments in the week, which I thought were totally unnecessary and only served to sort of inspire Manchester City and give them an extra incentive. In my mind, it didn't make any sense to me. He said that Liverpool's success will mean more to the fans, albeit less. Well, he said, they've probably been more successful than us. No, mate, they haven't probably been more successful. They absolutely have been more successful than you, and by quite some distance as well. But I just think, like, to come out and say something like it means more to our fans, I kind of get that, because a lot of us have talked about the fact that if Manchester City are found guilty of breaching the rules on 115 counts, as is sort of what they're alleged to have done, then you go, you know, it is tarnished. But those fans still enjoyed those moments. Those fans still enjoyed that success. And you're not going to be able to take that away from them, even if the trophy or the title essentially is stripped from them or they're relegated. You can't take away what they enjoyed as a group of fans. So I just thought it was a totally unnecessary comment to make from Trent Alexander-Arnold. It's probably one that will fire Manchester City up. And Erling Haaland said, well, you know, I won the treble last year. I don't know that Trent Alexander-Arnold and those players know what that feels like. He sort of fired shots back. So it's a bit of spice going into this one. I say that City are in much better condition than they are. And the players they have available, you know, make them, I'm not going to say favourites, but make them quite likely winners. The Anfield factor, does that even it out? It probably does, because City have a miserable record at Anfield. I think they've only won two of their last 32, I read somewhere yesterday. Now, that might not be 100% correct, but I certainly read that yesterday. That's a miserable record for a side that have been as good and as dominant as Manchester City have for a number of years now. So just to recap, my preference is a draw. My second preference, you might think this is mad, is Liverpool to win. And my third choice would be Man City to win. But if Arsenal do their job on Saturday evening and take all 3 points against Brentford, I will tolerate and live with any other outcome. I can handle it. And I won't feel regret and I won't feel disappointed. Unless the result that I wanted as first choice was in the bag and then something happened in the 97th, 98th minute and changed that. I don't know, maybe. But what we're going to do as well, because this game is so kind of intrinsically linked with Arsenal at this moment in time and our hopes and aspirations of going on to win the Premier League title, I'm going to bring you a reaction podcast live here on YouTube, and it'll be available to all our listeners, of course, in audio format, first thing on Monday morning, where we are going to, actually, I'll release it Sunday night as soon as we finish recording it, where we're going to react to that game. We're going to talk about that game, the lessons learned from that game. I think that's going to be really, really interesting. Not quite what we normally do, but I think in this instance, we can make an exception because this is a game that does have huge implications on the Arsenal. I'm going to leave it there. Thank you so, so much for joining me. In fact, I'd say I'm going to leave it there. I'm going to leave it there in terms of my agenda. I'm going to take a couple of questions, though, from the live chat before I sign out. So please, if you've got anything that you want to ask, chuck them in there and I'll pick up a couple of those before I go. Not on TalkSport 2 today. Did the shift yesterday instead, swapped around and had the pleasure of hosting the build-up to the Liverpool-Sparta Prague game. It's only the second time I've ever hosted the build-up to a match live on the radio. I'm normally a reporter at a match or part of a team in a build-up or whatever, but this was the first time I was hosting it. Second time. I did Manchester United earlier in the season as well. I thought maybe I'd jinx Liverpool, but I didn't because they won 5-1. But anyway, I know a lot of you that are in the chat box were listening in yesterday, and a few of you sent me messages. So thank you for that. It is really, really appreciated. Okay, let's take this question from AJ Envoy. Harry, how do you think we should approach the game against Brentford, knowing we have Porto on Tuesday? Should we aim to blitz Brentford early so we can rest some key players? I think that should always be the aim, to try and take the game away from an opponent as early as you possibly can. And I think we've seen Arteta's Arsenal do that a lot over the last couple of years. So, yeah, I think that will be the approach. And in an ideal world, we'll get to do exactly what you said. Take a few players off, give them a rest. Saturday evening to Tuesday is quite a quick turnaround. You know, I don't even know if there will be a training session in between. Will there be a training? Sunday will probably be about recovery. Monday, there'll probably be a light training session with the game to come on Tuesday. So, yeah, if you can give those guys a rest, then it'll be great. Yomi says, if we don't beat Porto, would you start looking at the possibility of getting another manager? No, it's not as black and white for me as if Arsenal don't get through FC Porto, then they need to start looking for a new manager. I hate that stuff because there are so many variables in football. There are some things in the game that are totally unacceptable. And Arsenal finishing eighth, for example, I understood why people were saying that was totally unacceptable. And I understand why people were making noise at that point that they wanted Arteta gone. I couldn't get my head around people that wanted him out at the end of last season because I don't think it was through any fault of his own that we failed to win the Premier League title. Just the circumstances seemed to kind of, you know, all come against us. And I think we haven't been in the Champions League for 7-8 years. And all of a sudden, everybody thinks that we're going to go all the way and that teams like Porto, who are in it year in, year out, should just be swept aside. I'll be massively disappointed if we don't get through because I think we are good enough, talented enough anyway, to go far in this competition. But we know that football doesn't work like that. We know that there are other factors. You know, there are other things at play. Like Real Madrid the other night were rubbish against RB Leipzig, as we discussed on yesterday's pod. But Real Madrid, you know, being bad, that's not enough for them to be eliminated. RB Leipzig have to do their bit and take their chances. And unfortunately, they didn't. So they're the ones that crash out. Sometimes it's about composure. It's about mentality. You're going to face different tactical styles and challenges that you're not used to when you're playing on the continent and over time as a manager. You know, you will hopefully develop and learn that. And I've always said this, if there was one thing I don't think Mikel Arteta's nailed since coming to Arsenal, it's the European thing. I think he's struggled in that. And I'm talking not just about the Champions League, but in the Europa League too, where we've been dumped out and eliminated by sides that we were nowhere near on the same level with. You know, Olympiacos, Villarreal, we were better than both of those sides and both of those sides dumped us out. Frankfurt, you know, if you go back a little bit further under Emery, it's not enough just to be talented in Europe. You need to do more. You need to develop a mentality. You need to develop the know-how, the experience. You have to understand that the game you're going to play is a very different one. Look how stop and start the Porto game was. Look how they, you know, grouped together and ganged up on us in order to try and, you know, disrupt our set piece routines by throwing themselves to the ground, you know, taking an age to kick the ball, to pass the ball. Like everything was designed to disrupt Arsenal, and they look to disrupt in a different way to your Premier League outfit. So you have to find different solutions. I will be gutted if we don't make it through, because I think this is a scoreline that is more than salvageable. But at the same time, as much as I'll be disappointed, and I'll probably pull apart the performance if we don't make it, I'm not going to sit there and say, sack Mikel Arteta while we're engulfed in a title race. Come on. That would be a nonsense to me. Okay, guys, I am going to leave it there. Thank you all so, so much for joining me. Really, really appreciate it. We'll be back on Sunday morning with a review of the Brentford game. And then we'll be back on... trying to think here. You know what? We'll try and do the Brentford review on Saturday evening, and we'll then bring you a reaction to Liverpool versus City on Sunday evening, and then on Monday we turn our attentions to that big game against Porto as well. So loads and loads of content to come. Make sure you're subscribed. Make sure you leave a like on the video if you haven't done so already. It really, really does help. And if you're listening on audio, please do leave us a review. We'll be back with more Arsenal chat, of course, over the weekend. And I'll see you all very, very soon. Up the Arsenal. Goodbye.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.